You're listening to a podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Welcome, everyone, and I appreciate your punctuality as well. This is one of the rare events when we're actually starting exactly on time, as far as I can tell. Thank you for joining us at Brookings here today. I'm Doug Elliott. I'm a fellow in the Initiative on Business and Public Policy, and it's my privilege to introduce one of the most important leaders in the European Union, Michel Barnier. He is the commissioner of the European Union with responsibility for the internal European market and for the services industry. His importance is apparent when one considers that just half of his mission, that of harmonizing the internal market within Europe, was the original core mission of the predecessor organizations that became the European Union. In addition to that, his oversight of the services industry means that he is the lead in the European Union on financial services reform. And for someone like me who focuses on the financial sector, I have to say it is literally impossible to believe he's only been doing this 16 months. I checked the math four or five times. And the reason it's hard to believe is because in that time, he's had a tremendous impact on the debate and on the financial services legislation and regulation going through in Europe and an influence around the world in this area. Perhaps I shouldn't be surprised. He's accumulated quite an impressive resume over the years. It's always humbling to introduce people like him, I'm afraid. He's always been a masterful politician. He started as a regional councillor in Savoy at the tender age of 22. He was president of the Savoy Regional Council at the age of 31. He was elected repeatedly to the French Parliament, both the Assembly and the Senate. And he has held many of the most important cabinet positions in the government of France, including at various times Minister of the Environment, Minister of European Affairs, Foreign Minister, and Minister of Agriculture and Fisheries. At the European Union level, He has been elected to the European Parliament, and he has been the commissioner for regional policy and for the reform of European institutions prior, obviously, to his present position. However, the hardest thing he ever did in his career may have been quite early, when he organized the 1992 Winter Olympics in Albertville. I can vouch from personal experience that Commissioner Barnier is a keen political analyst. In addition to being an effective minister and EU commissioner. That political insight has served him well in negotiating the hard-fought and complex reforms in financial regulation that are coming out of Brussels. And as you'll see, it helps to shape his overall view of the future of the EU as well. So please welcome Commissioner Michel Barnier.
Good morning to all of you. Thank you very much. Doug, for your kind words. Thank you for having mentioned this very unusual experience for a politician for having organized the Winter Olympic Games in 92. 10 years for 16 days. I was not alone. We were two co-chairmen at that time with Jean-Claude Killy, who is a very, very famous triple gold medalist. And it is unusual for a politician to organize the Games and certainly also to be re-elected after. Perhaps I want to disperse the legend that the French are always late and always on holidays. Because yesterday and today are days off in Europe. And yet I'm here at work like you this morning. And the reason I want to thank you and to say that it is a real privilege for me to talk to you this morning. And Brookings, dear Doug, is one of the most influential think tanks. I'm well aware of your efforts to study and discuss EU-US regulatory developments and relationships. This transatlantic dialogue is essential for me, and it is why I'm come often to United States. It is my third visit as European Commissioner in just over a year. and I will return next month. I joined the European Commission in February 2010. Since then, I have spent most of my time on one priority, reforming Europe's financial system, building a solid foundation for the future, so that the financial markets, and we need financial markets, are at the service of the real economy, and in the same time, the real economy at the service of growth and human progress. Ladies and gentlemen, let me share with you some ambitions. First, the European Union must tackle the Eurozone crisis. Note that I did not say crisis of the euro, but crisis of some countries in the Eurozone. You will have followed the development in Greece, Ireland, and Portugal. I will not deny that it is a challenge, but we are making real progress. We have built a strong solidarity between Eurozone members. We are putting in place a much stronger macroeconomic surveillance framework, increased economic policy coordinations, stricter economic governance, fundamental fiscal and structural reforms. Yes, we are facing a difficult test, but I am convinced that the Eurozone will emerge stronger than before. So, what I want to pass on to you is a message of optimism, or at least of determination. European leaders stand strong. They are united to defend Europe's common currency, its common rules, and its values. But work on economic governance is one piece of the puzzle. The other piece is my main responsibility, financial regulatory reform. So, where is Europe and financial regulatory reform? I see many comments from the United States about our regulatory work. Not all positive than can be expected, but it means that you are paying attention to what we are doing. And this was not the case five years ago. It's a change for the better. Our financial systems are interconnected. Our economies are interlinked. What happens in Europe matters to the United States. And what happens in the United States matters to Europe. We have no alternative but to work together, finding common solutions. It should not be too difficult. We are both following the G20 roadmap. The EU and the United States have played a leading role in shaping the future of the global financial system. Putting the global economy back on track towards sustainable growth and job creation. And it is only right. We are still the two largest financial markets. And now we have to fully implement what has been agreed. Ladies and gentlemen, the world is watching. It's time to deliver on our regulatory promises. As Europe and the United States move to the final phase of implementations, the focus turns to the technical details. And in financial regulations, technical details matter. This is sometimes difficult, and it is not always easy to understand the legislative process on the other country, especially when in Europe there are not one country but 27 countries, 27 nations. We are not, and we want not to be a federal state. We are not one nation. We are not one people, but 27 nations and 27 people. And sometimes it could be interesting to use 1 or 2 minutes to explain how we are working, what is and who is a commissioner. Because we are not a federal state, but a community of 27 states pooling their policies, pooling part of their sovereignty together, I do recognize that our institutions are a little bit complex and difficult to understand. There is no, for instance, there is no in the European framework a president or prime minister. There is two houses, the houses of the states, what we call the Council of Ministers, and several Councils of Ministers for each policies, and on the other side, the Council, the House of Citizens, which is the European Parliament. And in the middle, we have a very unusual and specific institution, which is called the European Commission, which work like a collective body as a prime minister. We are collectively, the 27 commissioners, the prime minister of Europe. And I can say, in a certain sense, that I'm just 1/27th of a European prime minister. And we are in charge of proposals to the two houses I just mentioned. This is why our continuing dialogue at technical level between the states and the European is so important. Let me mention in brief four issues on technical levels. First, derivatives. The first area where we need consistency is regulation of derivatives. We all agreed in the G20 about clearing and reporting. In Europe, we are reaching the final stages of our legislations. We are in the last few measures of the pipeline process in the European Parliament and the Council. Here in the US, regulators are consulting and drafting, implementing rules to Dodd-Frank. Incoherence and inconsistency between our rules will have certainly negative consequences for our markets. The financial system is by nature global. Differences could lead to global arbitrage. Trades may move where rules are laxer, and this would be, and this would put us all at risk. We must make sure our rules are the same on important issues, scope and conditions for clearing, collateral and capital requirements, and importantly, the recognition of each other's central counterparties and trade repositories. I have heard calls here in the United States that the Dodd-Frank implementation should be postponed or weakened. Delay is not the answer. Europe is committed, we will deliver, and I call on the United States to do the same. In Europe, I hear fears about extraterritorial effects of Dodd-Frank. I know that it is not the intention, but you will understand, ladies and gentlemen, that Europe cannot be and will not be naive. Equality and reciprocity are not only justified, they are also necessary. We need common rules to ensure market safety, soundness, and access. No divergence that will cause confusion and conflict. My second point is the implementation of Basel III for banks. The Commission will shortly adopt a proposal for all EU banks, regardless of their size. We will stick closely to what has been agreed in Basel. To be precise, it will be applied to 8,232 European banks, 8,000, compared to 20 in the US. And I call on other jurisdictions to do the same in time to meet our G20 commitments. It's the right thing to do. We must have a global level playing field. I can assure you that EU regulators will not accept a global regulatory race to the bottom. That would not restore confidence in the banking system. And the word confidence brings me to my third point, accounting standards. I'm confident that the United States will deliver on its promises to bring true convergence in the era of financial reporting. The benefits of one global financial accounting system clearly compensates for the transitional cost involved. We have been working on this issue for a long time, a very long time. And frankly speaking, the patience of Europe is reaching its limits. My fourth and final points today concerns crisis management and bank resolution. We do not have a European FDIC, so we have looked carefully at your impressive system. This autumn, I will put forward a proposal to create a European framework to manage banking crises. This may perhaps be the most important reform during my mandate as a European Commissioner, and I have always been convinced, not only for ecology, I was in charge a long time before, but also in the world of financial services, that it is better and cheaper to prevent than to have to repair. And also, recourse to taxpayers' money is simply no longer an option. The governments can't afford it, and our citizens will rightly not accept it. Banks of every size must be allowed to fail, but without bringing the whole financial system with them. Bankers, shareholders, and creditors must understand that they will carry the cost of a failure, and only this can generate greater responsibility. One small final point where I also hope to see change on your side in the United States. It's the compensations for bankers. We in Europe are the only ones, if I'm correctly informed, that have put binding rules on bonuses in place. I hope the situation will change so that pay structures stop encouraging excessive risk-taking. Let us aware, ladies and gentlemen, that certain compensations and certain bonuses are simply beyond our citizens' comprehension, and mine too. When I speak in Europe, I often say that we need more Europe, not less, because the European Union and its single market is our main asset to ensure financial stability, sustainable growth, and job creation. The EU single market is also our main safeguard against populism and protectionism and disintegration we are going on in the polls and in some elections in Europe. In the single market, we are united but not uniform. Together, we can build a financial system for our children and grandchildren on equal terms based on mutual trust. As Gandhi once said, we must be the world we want to change. Finally, I want to thank you for your attention, and perhaps to end by a more political and personal note. On the 9th of May, which is in Europe, Europe's Day, the anniversary of the great speech of Monnet and Schuman in Paris, creating the first community for coal and steel, and the first step of the unique market, the common market, 60 years ago, I gave a speech in Germany in front of Humboldt University, where I set out personally my vision for Europe. I strongly believe that Europe needs the United States, and I strongly believe that the United States needs a strong Europe. I believe in a strong Europe where Europe is an active partner, not just a spectator. It is in the USA interest for Europe to be strong, to be a global power. That means an economy, a currency, a foreign policy, and also a defense policy. The EU can be only a credible and a useful ally if it's at first a global power. A Europe which is politically and militarily weak is a weak ally. That is why the transatlantic relationship is so important at all levels and across all sectors, not only in the financial sector, but also, as I just right now told you, defense and foreign policy in the same spirit. and it is why I will continue working to improve and strengthen that relationship in everything that I do. I want to thank you for your attention, and now I'm ready to answer a question. If you don't mind, it could be easier for me to be more precise, to switch to France and to be helped by my interpreter. Thank you for your attention.
I'm thinking maybe this is on now. Anyway, thank you. And it's I'm sorry we didn't actually get enough chairs for everyone here. I'm pleased by the turnout. And thank you, Commissioner, for that. And again, as the Commissioner mentioned, while you've heard he has very good English, the things he says carry great weight. So
I'm not sure you are.
What he says carries great weight, so there are certain instances in which he'd prefer to speak his native language and make sure he gets the subtleties right.
Could be a free French lesson for all of you, huh?
That could be, and we could use it, by the way. I do have about 200 words of French, but only two of them are verbs, and that turns out to be an issue.
Can try.
Let me start by asking you a few questions, if I may. One is, as I know you're well aware, there's been a certain amount of controversy, I think perhaps manufactured, in the press about a letter that you wrote to Secretary Geithner and the response of the Treasury Department, in which it was perceived that you might be criticizing the pace of reform in the U.S. But let me ask you the more general question, which you alluded to yourself, which is, the U.S. and the EU have very different processes of creating laws and regulations. What is your view about the relative progress on the two sides of the Atlantic on financial reform? And perhaps you could talk a little bit about how you see the institutional structures affecting how that happens.
Tout le monde sait d'où cette crise est venue et comment elle est arrivée.
Everybody knows where this crisis comes from and how it happened.
Pourquoi elle s'est développée en ayant d'ailleurs le risque d'emporter toutes les économies du monde.
And why it grew and grew with running the risks of dragging with it all the economies in the world.
Ça a été une crise de la supervision qui a fait faillite dans beaucoup de pays.
It was a crisis of supervision which failed in many countries.
Une crise de la liquidité.
Liquidity crisis.
Une crise de la gouvernance dans un certain nombre de banques.
A crisis of governance in a certain number of banks.
Et puis je n'oublie pas le comportement irresponsable et insensé d'un certain nombre de banquiers.
And I will not forget the responsible and insane behavior of a certain number of bankers.
Je n'ose pas parler d'absence de morale.
I won't even mention the absence of any morale.
Ou d'éthique.
Or ethics.
C'est tout cela que les dirigeants du monde, dans le cadre du G20, ont décidé de corriger.
That's what all the leaders in the world, in the framework of the G20, have decided to correct.
Londres, Washington, Pittsburgh, Séoul, 4 rendez-vous où des engagements ont été pris.
London, Washington, Pittsburgh and Seoul, 4 meetings where commitments have been taken.
Par le président des États-Unis, les dirigeants européens, le président chinois et quelques autres.
By the president of the United States, Europeans, the Chinese president and a few others.
Et maintenant, nous devons faire ce qui a été décidé.
And now we have to do what we have decided to do.
J'ai dit tout à l'heure que une autre crise mal anticipée ou mal gérée serait dévastatrice.